Hi everyone, I'm Greg Lowe from Down Under in Australia. PG Down Under is a production from SQL Down Under. It covers Postgres, aspects of which are owned by the Postgres Global Development Group and the Regents of the University of California. Opinions and views expressed in the podcast are individual and don't necessarily reflect the opinions and views of SQL Down Under, of the owning organizations, or the organizations that guests are part of. Introducing Show 3 with guest Ryan Boos. Welcome. Our guest today is Ryan Boos, who's a Postgres advocate at Redgate. So welcome, Ryan.
It's a pleasure to be here, Greg. Thank you so much for asking me to come join you.
Indeed. So first time on the show. So tell us about who you are and what you do.
Ah, thanks for asking.
And also, how did you get involved with Postgres at all?
Oh, the stories abound, huh? I'm in Northeast U.S. I'm in Pennsylvania. I've been doing this whole tech thing for almost 25 years. I can't believe to say that, but actually started in education, and just because of my proclivity for tech, quickly got out of that and went into tech. So I have been, for the majority of my career, I was, in independent software vendor roles, helping run development teams, projects, things like that. But databases have always been my love. So a lot of my life early on was DB2 and Postgres and MySQL, and then I got into a company and spent 15 years with SQL Server. And after 15 years, I said, I'm ready to move, just get different experience. I was really enjoying Power BI and some of the new big data things. And I went to a real-time analytics company, predictive analytics company, thinking we were going to be on SQL Server. That was part of the interview. Everything happened. And I eventually showed up there after taking the job and set up my computer on the first day, and they handed me a connection string. And I said, this isn't SQL Server. They said, oh, no, we just released an update to our app. We've been working for the last 6 months to move to Postgres. And we just did that 2 weeks ago. And
forgot
I was just flabbergasted.
Totally
forgot. I said, didn't we tell you that? I said, no, that never came up. So I was kind of forced into it. And I've said this every time I tell the story, I really kicked and screamed because I love SQL Server. I love the community. I love the SQL family. And I just didn't understand Postgres, and everything I wanted to do, I knew how to do it in SQL Server. Right.
Yeah.
But after about a year, the turning point for me was finally starting to figure out where some of that community was in the Postgres world, right? So that was the hard part. I didn't know anybody. I didn't know how to go ask for help or even where to find good articles and good content. And as that started to happen, my attitude towards Postgres started to change. And so the last 4 years, I've been an advocate, 2 years at Timescale, which is a time series database based on Postgres. And then I've been at Redgate for almost 2 years.
Excellent. And listen, with the community, because you're involved with that, do you find a difference between the SQL Server community and the Postgres ones in terms of the mix of online communities versus physical in-person communities? And look, the reason I ask that is that for many years I've been attending anything that tends to happen here in Melbourne that's a Postgres event with like in-person user groups or things like that, but they're very few and far between compared to the SQL Server ones, where I just know that every month there'll be something on in town for sure. But there's quite a lot of activity and options online. So I just sort of wonder, is that much the same where you are, or is it different?
Really good observation and good question. Over the last 6 years, I would say, now the pandemic changed things for all of us, right? So some of that is things changed and everyone's trying to find their footing even 2.5, 3 years later. But the difference is, this is how I've always thought about and experienced the difference, right? The community around SQL Server doesn't have to worry about SQL Server. They have no control over what's happening. They can simply learn how to use it really well and become a helpful community for everyone else. The difference then, and so you get SQL Saturdays, you get things that have really existed for a long time, and they just have a perpetual community behind them. And user groups are active. Yeah, in the US, we are having all the SQL Saturdays, many of them are popping back up again. I mean, just a couple times a month, there's a SQL Saturday somewhere in the US.
Happening. And look, there's still online ones. Like I know, for example, I'm doing a session for the TriPass SQL group, you know, again in another week or two, and these sort of things. So, and that's going to be online. But I've found as I said, the in-person things have not picked up again in terms of Postgres community things here at the moment.
Well, and here's where I think part of it is, and I'm learning this more and more. You have really one main group that kind of organizes the community content, and that is the official project, right? PostgresQL.org is kind of what we refer to as the official project, and the actual people that run the project, manage the project, you know, have some amount of control. And so they and we really care about the open source nature of Postgres, and that translates into how meetups and events are run. And so they really, they do have a pretty specific list of what you have to do to be listed as a community event. And so sometimes that's just been a challenge without someone organizing it. But the good thing is, at least in the US, we have really finally started to have someone that's paying attention to community, you know, in a proactive role. And so I think those are going to start to change. But really, that's part of it. A lot of the focus, because it's volunteer, because of the nature of the project, the focus often goes towards the bigger conferences each year. So the one in New York City and the one in Europe, like those are the two keynote events. And if that's the time they have, they're going to put their effort towards that. And so the meetups haven't really been fostered very well. And there is yet nothing like SQL Saturday for Postgres. A lot of people are talking about trying to do something, but
there you go.
We'll see. We'll see what happens, right?
It's one of the things I keep doing is I keep looking at things that are there in the SQL Server community and thinking, how can we start that or make those things, same things happen in the Postgres side of things? Because clearly there's a need for that sort of thing as well. But look, I think in terms of product attitude from the vendor, one of the things I've always been saying to the SQL Server product team is that I wish they thought of it more as an building an ecosystem rather than just shipping a product. And I don't know if you have thoughts around that. So,
well, it's interesting because you've been a Postgres user. I mean, obviously, you're recording this podcast. And we know that, you know, that is one of the strengths of Postgres is again, it's all based on the open source nature, right? And so 20 years ago, 10 years ago, so many requests coming in, can you do this? Can you do that? And someone said, you know what? What if we made this thing extendable so that other people could write programs to solve those problems and we could focus on the core? And that's the strength of Postgres. We can modify how it runs or the feature set it has by adding extensions to the system. And I think that, Microsoft has started to understand, you know, at a kind of the value and the power of that. And so I don't know what's coming, right? I do think that there's opportunities for them to say, you know, there's so many things that could be done with products, with other services, if we could just allow points for this thing to become more of a platform that's extendable, rather than just, you know, its sole thing and everyone has to bolt on what they do. So I agree. I think it would change the nature and the way that people use it. And that'd be really fun to see what happened.
Yes, it indeed would. So listen, with distributions and things, if I look at, I suppose one of the concerns that people will have is if you look at, say, Linux, for example, there were so many different distributions, so many different ways that people had sort of evolved it over time. But the thing is, in the end, it's only a limited number of things that people have really added over time, and it keeps falling back to a handful of distributions anyway. So so I suppose that's the question is, how do you see that fitting in the Postgres world? Because like I'm always a fan of extensibility, but the question is, is that a great thing for people to be able to build things so that they can contribute it into the product and it may or may not end up there? Do you see it more where people are building things just for themselves?
Wow.
I have never thought about that in that, mm-hmm. that way. I think that, you know, the one of the things that extensibility allows us to do is in a sense almost a proof of concept, right? So if I have that opportunity, I might create a really valuable extension to do a thing. Maybe it's a data type, maybe it's a new index, maybe it's a new node in the query plan that does something unique. But I'm not going to carry that on for 10 plus years. It is a way for me to see if this is valuable, it works, and then maybe I could start to contribute it back. The problem is that that contribution process is often multiple years, right? Depending on how big the thing is, right? If it's a really kind of a major feature, it could take 2-3 years minimum for it to actually end up in a release. And that's part of the nature of Postgres that can be frustrating as a user sometimes, but also provides a ton of stability.
Yeah.
What I see in the market, again, having come from Timescale, is you're right. Postgres proper underpins Aurora and Azure PostgreSDB and Google Alloy. You know, like all the major vendors have their own flavor, and a couple of those are actually modified just through extensions. They don't actually fork the code directly. Yeah. So they've proven the capability of it. Timescale is another one. We don't, you know, they didn't fork the code. I think that will we end up in like that one thing? I don't think so, because what's happening is, right, we have the core product that you and I can use easily, but we're all going to end up relying on one of the major vendors, and they will have their own flavor that has just enough uniqueness to it to serve their purpose. And so that's going to be, they're all going to be, you know, 99.9% compatible with core Postgres, but there's often going to be that one or two little things.
Yeah.
The stuff that I love is some new products like something like NeonDB, Neon Database, which again uses the query layer of Postgres essentially unchanged.
Yeah.
Is attempting and has been for 2 years to add a hook into the core that would allow different storage plugins, extensions. Mm-hmm. And then they've completely rewritten the storage to use S3 and object storage and some other stuff. Yeah. And it's cool because you can like branch the database, you know, create branches live, and it doesn't impact your production. And it's, so those are the things I think we'll see some real innovation with.
Yeah, I think it's important with extensibility, because one of the things I find over the years in the SQL Server land is that the team will often build some feature, but then they don't build enough of it to be quite useful, but they also don't have the extensibility points where you could then go and fill the holes in. So it's very easy for a vendor to build something, put the effort into it, but actually kill their own thing by not having a way for you to actually make it useful. And it's sort of funny. I look at, you mentioned before, indexes and things. And so when they added the ability to create your own data types in SQL Server, one of the first things we said is, how can we create custom index types? And they were like, oh, no, you can't sort of do that, right? And but what was interesting is in the next version, they introduced spatial data types, which were actually a custom data type. But they also introduced a new spatial index, which was they built their own new custom index type, and that's exactly what we had been asking for back when they gave us the ability to build a data type. And so we were like, hang on, we can't do that. So yeah, it was
interesting. I totally get it. We two days ago I was on a call with Grant and Steve, you know, Grant Frischi and Steve Jones. And we were just talking about things like in-memory tables for SQL Server. And an old favorite of mine was Service Broker. I used to really enjoy Service Broker for specific projects, but you know.
And look, we have online training, and we still have people signing up for Service Broker courses, right? I mean, so people are still there doing it, right? So
it serves a really unique and great purpose when it fits that niche, right? But nothing's really changed about those for years, right? There's things that could have easily been improved. And it's like, well, it does enough for what we need, but and no one else has the opportunity to improve that. And yeah, I think you're right.
Look, the thing I always say with Service Broker is I think they did fabulous for those from the Postgres side and not familiar with it. It's basically a transacted queue that lives in the database. And the irony is everybody, I see it so many sites, people just build tables where they build their own queues. And you go, you know, like there's actually this thing in the database. Because the people who built it spent a lot of time thinking about, you know, everything from poison messages to, you know, all these things. And so, look, they did fabulous plumbing that most people would never think of in terms of how that would work. But then they hid it because there was no visible tooling. And they didn't really give prescriptive guidance on using it and so on. And it was, so I mean, yeah, they sort of like killed their own thing. But I think the thing that made it sort of worse is it's a really good example of extensibility where Klaus Aschenbrenner had add-ons for Management Studio at the time that showed classes and relationships and all the things between things in Service Broker, but there was no supported way to add that to Management Studio. And see, this is the problem, right? So there was no supported way for somebody to fill in the gaps when they had dropped the ball. And in the next version, I remember meeting two guys that came along and said, oh, we're the team, we're going to put the tooling in. And I thought, oh, great. But you know, soon after they disappeared and we've never heard anything more about it since.
I'm so glad you mentioned Klaus because what was his name? What was it? Because he was the source of truth, right? Because he helped develop the feature. And I totally agree. And for those, again, who my answer, anytime I talk about Postgres and things like that, it's like, hey, Postgres can do that. And how can it do that? Through an extension, right? At least one. And there's at least one, if not multiple extensions that now allow you to do queuing and other kinds of stuff like that. Mm. So but that is where the extensibility the becomes really fun.
Is that if you have a whole lot of extensions, you can easily end up with every version that you work with is then very different to every other version you work with. And of course, that's always the challenge. But it's the same for a software vendor. I know we used to build applications for, say, food wholesalers. And like every single customer really wanted to drive the product in a different direction. And so as a vendor, the thing you're going to decide is, do I just build custom versions for all of the customers, or do I try and build a core thing? And that's a tough call, right? Because you'll have people with 100% diametrically opposed views on certain things you go to build as a software vendor, and that's a tough call, right? As to, because you know one of them is not going to be happy no matter how you pick it. But we used to say to the customers, look, we've got this core product now, and if you stay on that, that's where you're going to get all the investment, the upgrade, like that's where the really nice stuff is going to happen, right? Now, it may not 100% fit what you're chasing, but overall, we think you're going to be better off here, right? The alternative is we branch your code off and then it kind of stays like that from that point on. And then every single thing that you want costs you to add into that code, where everybody else on the core sort of gets all those things just included as part of the upgrades. Yes. Right? And so that's a tough call as to how to do that.
It really is. Yeah, I would say in the extension, so a couple of things have happened over the last, honestly, even just the last 2 years and as recently as the last 3 or 4 months. One is, you know, the cloud vendors, so the way extensions work, they are actually code. So they have to be available on the physical server, as it were, so that they can then be installed into the database. So when you run a cloud-hosted database, I can't install the extension, so I have to rely on the ones that they allow me to use. And so a lot of people have coalesced around like 50 to 70 different extensions that prove to be useful in different ways, right? Whether it's geospatial. So
there is a common set of them that become commonly available.
And, And so that's one. So you kind of get a sense of, and then they are actually investing time in those extensions to make sure they work and they provide value to their service. So yeah, that is kind of what happens. Open source, all of them for the most part. So everyone, it's almost like a win-win. But mm-hmm. the discoverability has been hard. And so there have been a couple projects that have tried to help discoverability of extensions. Mm-hmm. One was PGXN, and then there's a company over the last year and a half founded called Tembo. They had a registry, and I think there was one other one. Well, David Wheeler is a gentleman, and he's been around for a long, long time in the community. He wrote PGXN. If you've ever heard of or used the migration tool called Skitch, he was in charge of Skitch and, you know, still is lead the product. Well, he was just hired by Tembo a couple months ago with the specific intent of trying to draw together his old project, what they're trying to do, and actually getting input from all the major cloud vendors so that we can have a better place and a better clearinghouse for advertising them, you know, giving feedback, having, you know, just a great source to find them, and then hopefully allow some of that new stuff to rise up.
And so, look, you're working at Redgate nowadays, and so this is a vendor who works across different databases nowadays. And so how, from a vendor point of view, how do you see the different product areas or ecosystems now, or the different platforms, actually? Sorry, is really the right question.
Yeah. So, you know, Redgate just last week celebrated our 25th anniversary. Mm-hmm. So the company was founded 25 years ago. And, you know, if you're in the SQL Server world, you generally know that Redgate exists and probably have at least trialed one or two of their products over the years around schema management or monitoring or something like that. And so one of the challenges is Redgate has so much excellent, you know, kind of institutional knowledge and expertise in SQL Server to make all of these tools, you know, ingeniously simple. Yeah. But now taking that across databases, it's like the fundamentals are the same in all the major databases. You know, we have this concept of catalog tables. There's a SQL standard to what those catalog tables should show and generally what they should do. But then there's all the nuances. And so I think that's been the challenge. It's been really fun, honestly, to work with the teams. My focus area is Postgres. You know, similar things are happening in Oracle and even MySQL. You know, seeing those teams develop a new curiosity for how, what they know, what they're experts in, you know, why and how is it just slightly different in this new thing? And how can we bring excellent value in a similar way? So monitoring is a really good example, right? Monitoring Postgres, all the concepts are the same, but the way you do it or the information that's available is really unique. Right? Yeah. There are things Postgres does not provide. There are metrics that we are used to that just don't exist yet, or they might exist in an extension if you're able to install it. And so trying to find out, how do you find problematic queries? How do you know when, you know, something about a configuration option is impacting the service? And then even more, you know, I think people get really surprised when you say, if you're running Postgres yourself, and honestly, even in the cloud vendors, you have tens or hundreds of options that you can actually change that impact the way that Postgres runs. 100%. You don't get much of that in SQL Server, right? There's like a memory and a couple other things. How many CPUs and parallelism and whatever. There are dozens and dozens of things I can change on the fly. I can change how a query plan works simply by setting an option, you know, at runtime. So there's that uniqueness too, that like, hey, we found something you could fix. Here's a way you can actually go change the way it runs, so it will probably perform better. I think those are the fun things I'm seeing.
How do you get on? I suppose it's interesting when you're mentioning extensions. And so when you're building out tooling to work against the product, do you assume that any extensions are there, or do you try and have the tooling run without any extensions? Or like, are there some that just simply have to be there or it doesn't work?
It's exactly that. So there are some that have to, and they, all of them come with Postgres by default. They just aren't enabled by default because everything takes some bit of overhead, right? And so they want the Postgres core team wants you to make the choice to take that 1% hit or 2% hit.
Yeah.
So yes, we rely on every monitoring solution.
Sometimes it's not even a hit, right? I mean, there was a discussion on the in the SQL Server Twitter sphere or X sphere yesterday, where they were sort of saying, look, do you install replication whenever you install SQL Server? Because otherwise it's a pain in the neck to go and find it later and then, you know, get it patched up to the right level and so on if you install it later. And they say, what's the downside of just having it there and not using it, right? And the only real downside I see in that case is that the security folk would look and go, you don't have code installed that isn't needed because all you're doing is increasing your attack surface. So it might not
That's
be
a great point.
It might not be any sort of performance hit, but having the code there increases the surface area for attack. So
it does. Yeah, that's a really good point. I think it depends what the extension is, you know, what it's monitoring. But yeah, we rely every solution. That's just how Postgres works. You know, there's a different extension for different kinds of metrics, which also gives you flexibility, right? If I don't want to deal with the new IO, you know, metrics in some way, then I don't have to enable that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we rely on at least some of the customs like PG stat statements. It's just you have to have. There's some others that could be installed, like PGStat Kcache and some of those.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we are at that point now of saying, hey, if something is installed, an extension like Timescale, if Timescale is installed, because you know we've been looking at some of these variations of Postgres for doing some projects, what does that then mean we have to monitor or do something a different way? So trying to choose intelligently, you know, some of these nuances, you know, how does it work differently in Aurora? Where do you get some of that information from? Because you can't get it from the database.
That's right.
Because it's a whole different architecture under the covers. So yeah, it's tricky. That is why I will say that's why Postgres specifically is a challenge to have one solution that just magically.
Hi, this is Greg coming to you from another time and place. If you have a data-related project that needs to get off to a great start with the right architecture, or if you have an existing project that's off the rails, why not contact us? We help organizations of all sizes, from startups to tier one financials, and we can help you too. Check us out at sqldownunder.com.
Monitors any Postgres instance out there, regardless of the flavor, because there are those differences even among cloud vendors. And so, yeah, really good point. And something
and
we're
so
just learning.
Do you then have to take the same approach with your own product where you have to have a core thing and then add on or enable things that depend upon whether those things are there or not?
I think that could be the case.
You get a richer outcome if the client happens to have those things in place, but if they don't, then that part of the functionality doesn't break perhaps, but it doesn't work. Yeah. So
that's actually really interesting. Cause I do think some of that happens. Honestly, it's even something we talked about originally, because like there's an extension called PGStat Kcache, not available everywhere, but really helpful if you are able to install it. And it could provide some more value. Now, we're not taking advantage of it yet, but it is one of those things we've been talking about. So, hey, if it's there and you as the client want to and can install it, you're going to get this value. But we're not going to fail, throw errors, or do whatever if it's not there. So, yeah, I think there are some things that products really can do that. It's very easy on startup to determine what's there. You can see what versions are available. So you can even do that, right? If this version of the extension is available, I know that I have something new, and I can do more of something with it. So,
yeah,
it's tricky. You know this. Not everyone might, but it's one of the unique things of Postgres, and this is a challenge that you can have an extension installed in all of your environments, dev and stage and prod or wherever you have, but extensions can be versioned. And most of them are versioned. I mean, everyone is versioned, whether or not you ever get a new version is the case. And so the one thing that Postgres doesn't do on a backup, it can't actually back up the extension itself. That's code on disk. Mm-hmm. But it actually does not back up what version you're at. You have to have a tool that recognizes that, or you have to note it. Because when you then restore a backup somewhere else, or you try and deploy something somewhere else, if you are not checking that you have the same version, you could actually end up in a bind. It doesn't start, the database doesn't work, or functionality you're counting on just isn't there. So that is one nuance, and I think, again, an area where the community's trying to do a better job of that, recognizing the need. And a lot of that comes from the cloud vendors. I think a lot of people don't know that all of the major providers now, and again, I refer to the big three, but it's more than the big three. They are all employing teams of Postgres developers whose sole job, primary job, is simply to contribute back to the open source project and help that project move along.
And to make the whole thing more manageable in those sort of environments. Yeah, 100%.
Absolutely. And so they all win. It's an interesting case where all the major providers are actually helping one another in various ways, right? Yeah. Because we all win when Postgres becomes more stable in a specific area, like monitoring, right? If I can have better metrics, we all win. And it's open source, so why not contribute it? So
with the, for example, the Postgres monitoring tools that you have at Redgate now, do you have different flavors of them for different, say, cloud providers, or is it a single product?
It's a single product, but the product, so when it comes to Postgres, we currently support, from a cloud perspective, we support RDS and Aurora, and we now support Azure Flexible Server for Postgres. Cosmos DB for Postgres, which is Flexible Server on steroids, with the Citus extension. That is coming next. And the reason is every one of them, and then we're going to get to Google, and whether it's Spanner or Alloy or something like that, it's often the actual metrics. Now, I can get the query metrics from Postgres, but things like memory, disk, I/O, things of that nature doesn't work the same. So we have to connect to an API to gather that information so it shows up and looks the same. There's one pane of glass. All the graphs, all the charts look the same. Where the data comes from is different. And so we have to...
You may need to call an API in the cloud hosting service.
Absolutely.
To be able to get that stuff rather than just... send a query to the database to be able to get the answers to that.
And,
interesting.
You know, that's one of the reasons you buy a product, right? I mean, we've all, how many billions of times have we had the build versus buy? And that just becomes one of them, right? Let the vendor take care of changes in the API and how things, you know, how things should work, and just worry about monitoring, setting up your alerts, your notifications and things like that.
Yeah. And so listen, the final thing I'll ask you about is, you had that year where you took a job. You thought it was going to be SQL Server. It ended up being Postgres. And you said it took you about a year to have that point where things switched over for you. But what were the main things you learned during that year that surprised you?
You know, I would say during that year, and I think I've seen this in a lot of other people as well who are trying to do a similar journey or have, is it's easy to focus on the stuff that you don't have or don't seem to be as easy to do. The very first thing, for the two things for me was tooling, right? Again, it's an open source product. Most people believe that pgAdmin is like the official Postgres IDE. It's really popular because it's linked, but it's not. It's just, it's an open source project supported by a company. It's one of the many, right? And so finding a tool that allowed me to be productive just took time. And I wished, again, I think some of that's gotten easier. Some of the tools, open source tools have gotten better. I generally use DBeaver, Azure, you know, Azure Data Studio came online during that year. I actually did some beta testing with it. So there are different tools that people are comfortable with. So that's one. And the other was, this is the biggest kicker, and it's so hard to explain how frustrating it can be until you just say, that's how it works. And I just have to be comfortable with the fact that's how it works. And that is procedural programming in SQL, right?
Yeah.
In SQL Server, every script, unless you set up, you know, unless you set it into like OSQL mode or something, OSQL, iSQL, I forget what it is. Yeah. Everything's interpreted as T-SQL.
Probably What's thinking that? Of, yeah. Mm.
Yeah. And so I'm so used to in SQL Server declaring variables, declaring loops, just throughout my scripts. And you can't do that in Postgres. A SQL script is interpreted as ANSI SQL with its own functions and things. And so when you want to do those kind of programmatic operations, often for me, it was during a product release. I had to go check data, iterate something, insert something new, blah, 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 you know. What you have to do is call it an anonymous code block. And it's basically this little syntax that says, hey, while you're executing this, quickly pop into PLPG SQL and run this thing. You can do a lot. However, you can't return data out of an anonymous code block. So you can't just like do a query inside this thing and return the results like you could to a temp table or something in a terrorist code block. So once I understood it, once I learned it, it was frustrating, but I understand why. And again, it's a functional database. If you're going to do something, create the function and just move on. Functions don't quite have the same. The community's not scared of functions, right? There's a lot of it's been what the product is from the beginning. It's a functional database, and you get a lot of configurability in how functions work. And so, those are the two things that just I had to kick and scream.
So my final question then is, if you could wave a magic wand at the product, what's the number one thing you'd change?
Wow. Whew. Feature-wise?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. I think one thing I would change really does come down to observability. That could be a lot of things. But coming from SQL Server, having some kind of standard way to do what Query Store does would be so beneficial, right? It would just
transform itself. I might add, it hasn't been there forever either, right? So,
which it hasn't, right? 2016.
Yeah.
It feels like forever. But once you had a way to historically look at stuff and, you know, hey, it's 3 a.m. I don't know why the plan changed. Let me pin it back to the old one for a little bit and then move on. That'd be one. And then honestly, to couple that, there's this ongoing discussion over things like there is no plan cache, right? Postgres, it just doesn't exist. It's not a thing that actually exists. So you would need that in some form or fashion to make that really, really usable. So I think in tandem, doing that in a smart way, you know, intelligent way would be good.
That's great.
There's other stuff too, but that comes up often, especially with observability.
Yeah. And so pretty much coming up to time, but what's coming up for you? So
I have one cool question for you. I don't know how you started using Postgres.
Look, I'm probably a bit of a database junkie, you know. I love watching these things and trying, and so even from early on days, I've played around with it a lot. In fact, I have sometimes somewhat esoteric interests. You know, like just yesterday, I was looking at what was happening with Plan 9. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
No.
Okay, so here's a classic little thing: is that the guys who did a lot of the initial Unix stuff particularly early options like Minix and some of those things, there was a branch off that they did called Plan 9, which was named after Plan 9 from Outer Space, which was widely regarded as one of the worst movies ever made, often voted as the worst movie ever made. And it is a true classic if you haven't watched it. And so they created a thing called Plan 9, which was it's very rare people build operating systems from scratch nowadays, right? And
sure.
it was a bit Unix-like, But it had some other interesting features and things associated with it. And so I looked it up just yesterday, and I was thinking, I wonder what happened with that, you know. And they're still doing bits of distributions. And then I noticed that there was a conference in the US that was held literally about 2 months ago or so. And I thought, wow, you know, if
oh, my goodness.
If you know, that's the sort of thing that I'd actually get a kick out of, just going over and sitting and watching that conference. You know?
That's funny.
I think, and so, yeah, so like I've certainly had an interest in that. But look, yeah, work with databases for so long now. I mean, even just early ISAM things and, you know, the usual everything from mainframes to minis to, you know, things along the way. And, yeah, Postgres was just one of those things that appeared along the way that I've always had an interest in. And, look, the thing that I used to say to the SQL Server people, they often look at SQL Server, they look at Postgres, and I said and there was always a big difference between the two, right, in terms of capability. Mm-hmm. But what I used to say to them is when they need to start worrying is when it was good enough. You know, and I think it got to good enough quite a while ago. You know, and
I agree with you.
And yeah. So that's at that point just increasing interest. And as I said, when I built the Wide World Importers samples for Microsoft back in 2016 or 2015, 2016, as I did build a port of that, a very basic port of right. that for Postgres at the time. And I didn't know where that would end up, but I do see it kicking around nowadays. So
yeah.
There you go.
That's great. That's awesome.
Awesome.
Well,
hey,
good.
Listen,
I
so what's coming up in your world, Ryan? So where will people see you or hear from you or what's happening?
Oh, thank you for asking. This fall is busy, so this is when the main mm-hmm. Postgres conferences happen, and so I'll be actually, if anybody that hears this in the U.S. on the East Coast, I'm actually doing a free day of training through Redgate on August 22nd in New York City, mm-hmm. just to teach the basics of Postgres, particularly from a SQL Server focus. So if you're interested, reach out, and you know that'd be good. And then we have Postgres U.S. conference in New York City in September, end of September. Postgres EU conference in October, PASS conference in Seattle in November, mm-hmm. And a couple webinars in between. So I probably have 8 or 9 videos along with Grant on the Redgate site you can find in YouTube channel called Postgres 101. Mm-hmm. And just trying to keep walking through little parts of Postgres just to give people an initial lead into what's happening there. So check them out.
Awesome. Well, thank you so very much for your time today.
Greg, thank you so much for inviting me. And it's been a pleasure to meet you in person finally and really enjoy this conversation.
That's great.
Thank you.